Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Originally founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chump, we decided to rebrand when the game relaunched in the second edition. A huge thank you goes out to Fantasy Flight Games and George R. R. Martin for this game and world we love, and of course to my co-hosts and you, the listeners. Please, if you enjoy the show, leave us a review on iTunes or your platform of choice, comment on our Facebook threads, or even better, support us on Patreon. We love turning that kind of support back into the community. This is Season 10 of the White Book Podcast.
Welcome back to another week, props and slops, a little out of order, but it's fine. We're going to roll with it.
Are we out of order?
Well, we did two White Book episodes in a row.
Oh, we did. I guess that's true.
Yeah. Did we release the White Book episode that was dated by the time we released it?
No, time has lost all meaning to me. Is it Friday yet?
It's definitely not Friday.
It is when they hear it.
Perfect. Now that we're doing remote school, time has a very particular meaning for me again. So it is Tuesday.
Let's put it this way. Ever since Glazer got on the show instead of just listening, there hasn't been any fan out there to berate me when I've missed an episode release. So right now during quarantine, they're just kind of coming whenever I get off my lazy butt and edit them. So there's probably going to be two this week.
Great. Sounds good. Did you guys introduce yourself? Because Will just introduced me. I'm Aaron.
I'm Roy.
And I'm Will. And Roy and I didn't talk over each other for our intro. I think this is a win.
First time in like 2 months.
It's not true. The last time we didn't either.
No, the last time neither of you spoke.
There's this like, yeah, that was the time we both tried to wait each other out.
Like 15 seconds of awkward silence. Welcome to Props and Slops.
I may actually make that even longer when I get around to editing the episode. It'll be great.
You're not going to remember. Good luck.
No, I'm definitely not. Oh, well.
All right. So what's our first prop, Will?
First up, I'm going to start small. I'm going to start with the novel that I finished. I have a really terrible habit, much like all of my hobbies, of getting half to three quarters of the way through something and then setting it down. So back in October, I was in a spooky sort of mood, and I picked up a Sherlock Holmes novel titled A Betrayal in Blood. And I just now picked it back up a couple days ago and actually finished the last quarter of the book and actually really dug it. So the conceit with A Betrayal in Blood is, however, that it takes place in the let's call it the Victorian pulp shared universe. And Dracula also happened in Sherlock Holmes, London. So this takes place sometime after Count Dracula has been killed and the Dracula papers published. And Holmes becomes convinced that it was all a facade. It was a clever scheme by one Abraham Van Helsing, and that no such thing as vampires exists. And it's pretty cool. I really like the way it kind of weaves in different perspectives on what happened during Dracula and kind of some weak points in that narrative to present its own case for it all having been a nefarious enterprise. I don't want to give too big of a spoilers if anybody else enjoys that type of thing, but I thought it was well done.
So A League of Extraordinary Gentlemen?
Sort of, yeah. they don't really bring in any other like good guys, so to speak. It's still, you know, the usual Holmes crew, Watson and Inspector Bradstreet, not the normal police officer, but one that does appear in the canon works. And why is my brain shutting down on Holmes' brother?
Mycroft.
Yes. Mycroft, yeah. Mycroft, that sort of thing. So they don't, you know, branch out to pull in Quartermain or anything like that, but it was still cool.
It does sound pretty cool.
I've read nothing.
You're an English teacher, so that's doubly bad.
Well, it's AP time, so I've read about a novel's worth of essays.
Okay.
But I don't think that really counts as like reading as far as anyone wants to hear.
Depends. About. How good were the essays?
Like, I'm not gonna be like, and then all over the gun. Like I graded one class first and I was like, I'm incompetent, and like freaked out. And then I graded my other two classes and they were fine. So I have no idea what happened. The spoiler, I'm the teacher of all three. Don't know how two learned and one is just like, duh. But yeah,
here we are. That's sometimes just the nature of being a teacher, Glazer.
Yeah, I know. I've been doing it long enough, but it still feels really weird and terrible, right? Like, it's not like,
oh, yeah.
Why am I bad? And it's like, I'm obviously the same human being in all three, like teaching the same lessons in the same level, of course, the three different groups of people. And one group is just like, duh, we like you, but our thumbs up our butt. And the other two are like, yeah, obviously, we just do the stuff you told us. I like sounds that like way teaching. Better. Oh, well. I want to prop the Nintendo Switch as a console.
It is a good console.
Like, they have a ton of fun games, right? Like, I don't love super realistic games. Well, they have a reasonable amount of things like Witcher 3. That have that feel of a modern game, but they have just a really wide variety of genres, and I really, really appreciate their fairly extensive weekly huge sale. Like they don't put up any of their own first party games, but almost if you wait it out, almost everything else ends up on sale sooner. So props to the Switch.
That's pretty sweet.
The Switch is pretty sweet. It's a very, very well designed system. Nintendo is very good at coming up with the sort of sweet spot between handheld and like PlayStation 4 style consoles. So Ala has a Switch. I have no complaints about it. Yeah, it's great.
It seems really solid and nice for like multiplayer too, with the Joy-Con, even just off the bat, being able to pop them off and have two players, easy to connect more and keep going from there. So.
Yeah, the well designed good machine.
I do want to
half slop Hollow Knight, which was a huge prop earlier in this show's run. So I'm old, and that game gets hard. And like everywhere, like I'm like three areas in, and like everywhere I go, I walk for like 3 seconds, and I'm like, oh, I'm dead. Oh, I'm dead. And like it's just I enjoy difficulty. I just don't like, there's a thing a lot of modern games do where it's just like, you're going to die a lot, deal with it. And I don't really enjoy that. Like, I don't mind dying, right? But like, it shouldn't be like, I don't like the steepness of it where it's like, learn this now or just die every, that doesn't really do it for me. It's the same reason I don't like Dead Cell style games, which I otherwise enjoy. I just think that ramping up difficulty is nice, but it's just, I mean, like, it's just not.
Yeah, like in today's day and age, like when we were kids, video games to some extent kind of had to do that to make up for lack of content to keep you playing longer. But like that shouldn't really be a concern these days, right?
I actually think, I don't know, that kind of difficulty that Glazer's talking about is extremely popular in many genres.
Clearly, it's really for a lot of people. It's just not for me. So if that's the kind of thing you enjoy, and it's not like Dead Cells hard, so it's not at that Dead Cells level, like, right? It's not impossible. I'm sure if I just practiced enough, I could do it. But then it's work, and like I have work to do if I'm working. So like I don't mind having to think it through. But if it's just like hone your reflexes to know this pattern well enough, that's just not for me. Again, like, I get that plenty of other people like it. If you're listening and that's you, go for it. But it's not for me. So I moved on to a new game, which I will prop shortly.
Cool. Dang. Now you've got me curious, though. I'm going to be waiting on bated breath.
Oh, well, Fire Emblem Three Houses, on Roy's recommendation for literally a year and some change now. It's one of the best.
Wow.
Yeah. It's,
guys, that's right. It's coming up on a year.
One Jesus. Of the best games Time I've flies. Ever played. I'm playing on casual because I'm casual and I'm playing with like permadeath turned off. Although, honestly, if I'm on casual, I probably should have just turned permadeath off. No one ever died. But it's very fun with a really, really good story and a lot to do in a way that doesn't make it feel like a chore. It's really consistently super fun, super well designed, with lots of choices, lots of people to get to know. It's just fun. It's... Roy, go ahead. you unmuted yourself. Yeah,
I was going to say, I agree.
I was like, you really like this game. I'm not sure what the sigh was.
No, I apologize. No, I
figured.
I am happy that you could enjoy the game. It is amazing. Like, no joke.
First game in like two couple generations that I plan to play more.
Yep. It's definitely the kind of game I'm about halfway through my second playthrough. I go back and forth to it because I'll say that I got into it hard last summer. So I did like every nook and cranny you could do in your original playthrough. So I'm sort of taking my second playthrough slow and steady. So
my next playthrough is going to be much more intense. Like, I plan on putting the difficulty up but keeping permadeath off. But I'm like also going to use a FAQ and guide and stuff and try and figure out the best way to do it. I don't super like recruiting, although obviously that's a huge part of the game. You can recruit people from other classes. I just like getting to know my people and using them.
Yep. I mean,
although Shamir is too good.
Yeah, Shamir's pretty busted. She's also a good character, too. I didn't particularly think that I would like her, but I ended up really, really, really liking her character. I mean, I like 90% of the cast is really good, which is very rare in these kind of games. It's even rare even in a Fire Emblem game. Usually there's some really obnoxious characters, but there's only like one or two, and they're not nearly as obnoxious as some of the other games that they've had.
I don't love Lorenz.
Lorenz? Is I it Lorenz? Lorenz. Yeah.
Lorenz. I don't love Lorenz. He's improved, but like, I'm using him mostly just because he's really good. And I didn't train flying enough, so I don't really have flying units, so I really need to get
on. Yeah, you really do. But your main character in Golden Deer is pretty naturally good at flying, so.
Yeah. He's a bow user, though, so, but like, whatever. But there, he gets his own special class, so I'm trying to just sort of like level him without going crazy.
And when he reaches his max, you should take him out.
Yeah. So there's him, and then there's I don't love Marianne. I've only played Golden Deer, and I obviously never
like. You might be literally the only person on the planet that doesn't like Marianne. Like, she is one of the most popular characters in the entire fandom. Yeah.
Really? The really quiet Marianne who wants to talk to horses.
She gets shipped with like every male and female character ever.
She's just so cliche.
She has a little bit more depth to her over time.
Look, she's getting more depth. She's getting more depth as we go. But like, Hilda's developed really well.
Well, like a lot
of the other characters who at first weren't great have become really great. And I'm waiting for Marianne to like do anything. Also, my tea party with her sucks.
Yeah, I mean, like, Marianne is not a character.
I
particularly like her interactions with what's the name of your main character? Byleth. Or Bailiff. But her interactions with some of the other supporting characters are really good. So, and the thing is, she also is one of the characters I think who has the most romantic pairings outside of her house, so she tends to get recruited by people a lot. I know she was in my Black Eagles playthrough. I forget who I paired her off with.
I like getting to know people, but I could not possibly care less about the room.
So I spend a lot of time with my romantic pairings. I had it pre-planned all before the game even came out. So, but they didn't have a breeding system like the last two Fire Emblem games.
There's not generations.
I know, which is sad. I want to see my perfect pairings, whether or not they're cool kids are. I have a strong attachment to my OG Fire Emblem Awakening pairings. So, anyway,
they ever released that, I would have played.
It is very good.
If it were on a system, I would play it.
I think so.
They might remaster it at some point.
I would think so.
Fire Emblem Three Houses is one of the best video games I've ever played. So,
mm-hmm. I agree. And it's Roy.
Oh, is it my turn?
You said and it's, and then you just stopped talking. But okay, go ahead.
I apologize. Yeah, I'm trying to think about. I guess I'll talk about Final Fantasy VII Remake, which I'm about 2/3 of the way through. If I kind of understand how the pacing of this game is going, it is quite excellent. It is a really beautiful reimagining and retelling of one of the most classic, you know, almost, I guess you could get like. I guess Final Fantasy VII is kind of like one of the first RPGs of the modern era. But
I would say it kicked it off, yeah.
I mean, definitely when it comes to JRPGs, it is definitely, one of the first RPGs of the modern era.
One of the first that did sci-fi, not fantasy.
Yeah, it did sci-fantasy, right? Like,
yeah.
There's definitely fantasy elements to Final Fantasy VII.
Did we say Buster Sword?
Among other things.
Giant dumb sword, yes.
It's really, really very well done. It does a really good job of adding depth to sequences that were, as I remember it, a little slapdashy fast. Because, I mean, as everybody knows, you know, the Final Fantasy VII Remake takes place in Midgar in the first maybe 5 to 10 hours of the original Final Fantasy, depending on how slow you went, which conveniently is the last time I played it, I got as far as recruiting Yuffie. So, I mean, I've replayed it, you know, I played the game like 4 times, but like about 5 or 6, maybe not even 5 or 6 years ago. It might've been even more recently than that. I think I was in this apartment. So it was like 3 years ago. I played like 10 hours of the game, 12 hours of the game. Before I was like, this game's too old. I was like, I don't want to grind. The memory's fresh. They do a good job of expanding upon that in more of a way that makes sense than you would think. Like when Glazer was very much like, wait, you're paying $60 for what used to be 10 hours of content. I think it's worth the $60 because what they do is they do a really good job of building out the emotional resonance of a bunch of stuff that happens at the beginning of the game that isn't super built up. Like Sector 7 in particular, as a setting, is much more well developed. And so is Sector 6. And so is even Wall Market is like way more like deep as a storytelling experience than it was in the original. And I really appreciate that. And it adds more depth to the more tragic elements that happen later in the narratives. That end, they managed to update the, one might say, infamous cross-dressing sequence in a way that I think is really respectful of how gender norms have changed and the expectations of like what we think about people who don't necessarily conform to traditional gender roles. Like they do it in an actually pretty respectful way while still being silly. And that's actually really cool. I was actually really impressed by that sequence. particularly for a Japanese video game, you don't often get those kinds of really interesting big budget JRPG games. Like, you can just compare it to Persona 5, which of course is one of my favorite games, but there's some really homophobic sequences in it. Well, luckily Royal retranslated it and made it less homophobic, but the original one had some just very gross scenes in it that just were like, what is this, 1996? But Final Fantasy VII, you can tell they put a lot of thought into how it would play, and I was really impressed. So yeah, it's really good. It does have a couple weaknesses. I think that the pacing, as you move to the first climax of the story, I think the pacing's a little bad. I'm trying to like walk around spoilers of Final Fantasy VII. The ghost, because like not everybody's played the remake. So I'm trying to focus on how things happen in the original. The ghost train, you know, like when they go through the train yard, like that sequence has been really expanded upon and it really screws up the pacing. And because you're like, oh, we got to go do something important. And it's like, oh, we're going to do like a 2-hour ghost train thing. And then the voice acting is a little sketch. Cloud's voice is actually really good. So is Barrett's. And most of the Avalanche people, but I go back and forth on Aerith and Tifa's voice actresses, particularly because I've heard the voice actress who does Aerith. She's a YouTube person. I've seen a couple of her videos. And whatever direction that voice director gave her, I'm not sold on it. So I'm not super sold on two of the four major characters' voice actresses. I think they're trying hard, but they just don't like land for me in a way that the actresses who did the characters for Advent Children and for Kingdom Hearts did. So anyway, I would overall say strong prop. If you enjoy Final Fantasy VII as a young person, you should definitely check it out. And it is definitely worth the full video game price.
Alas, I'm not on the PlayStation bandwagon, or I would give it a try, but
a game I really, Xbox really for want. Me. Yes. Nope, Switch. A game I really, really
it is the bandwagon
like is coming out, or wants. I guess I don't know if I like it technically. It's coming out on PS4, so now I might actually want it. Yeah, the Sakura Wars game. I played the PS2 one, which got like
release
run after PS3 was out for quite a long while. And it was phenomenal, and I would really, really like to play more of that series since I no longer have any access to a PS2. And one actually coming out in English seems great.
Yeah, I've heard good things about the port. So,
let's get out. All right, Will.
Mm-hmm. I think I'm gonna go on over to Tales from the Loop, which I think I talked about in chat, but have not actually mentioned yet on the show, right?
I think you have, but I could be wrong. Go ahead.
Okay. Sometimes it kind of blurs together, and then I start to say it, and I'm like, wait, I've said this before. So Tales from the Loop is a new Amazon series that, well, pardon me, it's a little tricky to explain as far as I don't want to draw the quick and obvious comparison to Stranger Things, because this is also a retro kind of 80s feel show. But it is wildly different in tone and a lot of the setting. So it's based on a series of art books and paintings and, well, digital works that Swedish artist, whose last name I'm sure I'll butcher, Simon Stellinghag. We'll see. Maybe we have a Swedish listener still who can correct me on that. But he did these really interesting kind of wistful retro futuristic sort of paintings or works where you'll see, you know, like standard 80s looking boxy police cars and stuff, and a giant robotic figure in the field just past them, things like that, where he's kind of combined them. A couple of years back, he got picked up actually and turned into a tabletop role-playing game by Modiphius. Let's see, back in 2017, because it actually won 5 Emmys over there for best game, best setting, best writing, best internal art, and product of the year. So effectively swept the RPG Oscars, so to speak. And then now Amazon has brought it to life in a TV show. So it's a sci-fi anthology show. So the feel is very different from the kind of adventure show of Stranger Things. And it does a really neat thing where characters and stories kind of weave in and out of each other. Being an anthology, you are not following the same characters each time, but everyone is in this small town where most everyone is employed at The Loop, this scientific research facility. And so, you know, one episode may follow a kid from a family and how his life is going. And then the next episode may be about his parents. And then the next episode might be one of the parents' coworkers, and that sort of thing. And you kind of follow the chain around how everything's interconnected. And I really like how well it handles, how the problems that are tackled in one episode then kind of set that next domino falling for how the next person's life reacts to what happens. And like all great sci-fi, or at least good sci-fi, it is examining some facet of the human condition by cranking an aspect, generally in this case of technology, to 11. Right. So you can really play up the traits that intersect with whatever that particular thing is. And so I don't think all of the episodes are a huge hit on that note, though many of them are. But episode 3 in particular was a real standout for me, titled Stasis, dealing in a pretty neat way using technology to represent kind of the extremities of young love and the way the world kind of stops, or at least seems to feel to stop when you're in those throes of obsession. Another episode, it was either 4 or 5, titled Control, dealing with a middle-aged man feeling like his life is spiraling out of his control, and his attempts to regain some feeling of control through, a giant robot. It's really cool. The overarching message of most everything, I would say, or the theme that gets explored the most, is definitely loss. It's a very bittersweet series, but I highly recommend it. It's only 8 episodes. I'm sure Amazon will probably do more seasons, but since it is an anthology, it's all pretty well self-contained if folks want to check it out. So I highly recommend Tales from the Loop.
I will check it out at some point. Right?
Yeah, so I can, I guess, talk about the 2 shows I watched on Netflix recently. I'm about halfway through one, and I think 2/3 of the way through the other. I didn't talk about Freud last time, did I?
Ooh, you mentioned it, and I've started it. I'm 3 episodes in now, so I can relate a little.
I'll be a little careful then with what I say. If you like absolutely batshit crazy reinterpretations of history, particularly ones with very macabre twists on famous people. Freud is the show for you. It is an absolutely batshit insane, silly retelling of the early career of Freud. One of the things that's fun is my wife and I like to look up when they mention actual historical events and aspects of Freud's life to see how accurate it is. And it does actually a pretty good job of drawing on Austrian history of that time. Oh, everything else is insane, but a lot of the background, as Alan just said back there, a lot of the background details are actually true. And like you can actually figure out which weird imperial war the people were supposed to be veterans of that's going on. So they put a lot of thought into it. And that's half the appeal of it. But it really, you know, the character of Freud in the show has no real connection to the actual historical figure of Freud. It's more sort of like sexy Freud crossed with Sherlock Holmes.
That
would be a good way to describe it.
Yeah, that sounds legit.
In a Lovecraftian style story, I guess. But actually a bit more Holmesian.
Yeah.
Because there may not actually be any supernatural. I don't know. But they hint that there could be supernatural, but there may also not be. That's unsettled. I haven't finished the show.
At least where I am, even if it's not actually supernatural, it is like super fantasy science. I mean, there's scenes where a lady who has met Freud exactly once that we've seen on screen before that walks in. He barely touches her wrist and she says sleep, and he instantly falls into a hypnotic sleep. So,
well, I don't want to give any spoilers, so yeah. I won't. Does get explained.
I feel like that's fairly small so far. So okay, there may be more spoilers, but at the moment it seems pretty out there, even in the more sciencey aspects.
Yeah, but I would definitely prop it. I will warn people: it is gory. Like it's not super violent. Like there's not like a lot of like people. Like there's not a lot of like specific instances of violence, but there's a lot of just like gore, if that makes any sense. You know, they'll like the aftermath of a lot of violence are things that the characters deal with, and that is pretty unflinchingly depicted. So, yeah, so it's very gory. So I will warn you, if you have a low stomach for gore, it is not the show for you. But if you do enjoy batshit crazy historical fiction, you should check it out.
Yeah, I will say at least where I am, there have been just buckets and buckets of blood. Buckets. And
it is actually Austrian too, so it's super cool.
Yeah.
The show.
Yeah, so. It's very cool. Although a lot of times I have a hard time watching dubbed live action shows, much more so than anime, where you know, you don't get the lip movement and everything. But fortunately I've been quote watching end quote this while working, meaning it's kind of on in the background on the laptop beside me, so I can just listen to the English translations and you know look over every minute or two, which has made that much easier for my brain to cope with. You know what it is? Oh. Had a hard time with though. I don't know for sure if this guy will remain one of the good guys through the rest of the show, but at the moment, he appears to be the policeman with the shaved head and the very over the top mustache.
Have you watched his backstory episode yet?
Yeah, about why his hand was locking up on him.
Yeah, there's more too as well.
Yeah. That's all I've seen so far is the flashback to the war and why his hand was locking up, but. It's been very hard for my brain to wrap around that. Like through, you know, years of conditioning, I just look at that extremely stereotypical, like Austrian man of that era and say, nope, villain, definitely a villain. Every scene I see him in, I'm like, nope, there's going to be something wrong here. So it's just interesting.
Yeah, no, his character goes to some other interesting place. I wouldn't say he's definitely not one of the bad guys, but he's definitely of a complicated, one of the more complicated characters on the show.
Okay.
There's some more background, some actually pretty interesting background stuff. The thing about me and Netflix dubs is I'm a sucker for Netflix dubs. I like watching them with the dubs and then the undubbed, like, and then the official subtitles.
Ah.
And like, I like to enjoy how they're not the same.
Okay.
So the dub is done by different. So the dub is not them just reading the subtitles. So the translators of the dub are not the same as the translators of the subtitles. So often they're very different. And I find it really amusing. Watching The Dark with it on was a lot of fun. So, but that's just a weird personality quirk I have. Real quick, the other show that I've been watching, which is also a prop, probably even a more enthusiastic prop than Freud, is The Outer Banks, which is another batshit crazy show, but on a different type of batshit crazy. It's more like The OC or Riverdale, but okay, closer to The OC. It doesn't like have Riverdale's kind of like supernaturally aspects of it that have been kind of like, you know, the secret, the like all the stuff that's happened in Riverdale. Like it's less supernaturally and more like OC, really stupid teen drama. And it is really stupid teen drama, and it's just a really amazingly stupid television show, but it's an amazingly stupid television show that is exactly on my wavelength. It is so it's about basically the main character gets, you know, it's a classic rich versus poor storyline in it. And the main character gets involved in a treasure hunt. And I don't want to spoil for people, but because as I found out from my students the other day, there are people who take this show very seriously. One of my students is like, "You think this show is stupid, Mr. Rogers?" I was like, "Yeah, no, I think it's brilliant. Yes, it's great." But I love it. It's extremely enjoyable. You know, great to just sit and watch if you want something that's real high escapism. And it's pretty family friendly, you know, like in the same way of like sitting down watching like an 8 p.m. regular TV show would be these days. Again, it's like, so it's, it shoots about like the OC level of appropriateness. So yeah, if you like that kind of storytelling and you want a show about, I also love shows that are about places and do a really poor job of like actually being like that place. And definitely The Outer Banks is like that. It is very little like the actual Outer Banks, if you've ever been there. In fact, it's not even filmed in The Outer Banks. It's filmed in South Carolina, not North Carolina. And you can tell. And these are the kind of things I love. So it was very, very much a show that was designed for me to enjoy, similar to Freud, but in a bit more family-friendly or standard TV style. So if you like Riverdale or you like The OC, you'll like Outer Banks.
Okay. I may have to check that one out then.
Do you want to talk about Magic Laser?
All right. The last thing I want to prop. I want to prop Magic the Gathering Arena. They've put live player drafts online, and they're amazing, and we are doing them all the time.
It's a big step up for online CCG, TCG, whatever, playing. Lack of like chat and actual interaction with people has long been one of my complaints about why most of them don't hold my attention. So this is a step in the right direction.
I'm a very big fan. We've been playing like a couple games a day at least. The new set is fantastic, so that really helps everything. It's just great. I'm a really big fan, and I urge people to try it if they haven't.
Agreed. It's a really, really good set, limited wise.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't played that much Constructed, or even really watched that much Constructed yet, so I can't really comment on what it is. But if you've been following the Magic social media world, people have strong opinions about its impact on Constructed Magic. But as a limited set, it's really, really well designed. I'd say it's probably my third favorite set since I started playing with Dominaria. So, yeah. So I've definitely really, really enjoyed the games.
And that's it for me.
I'm done.
I am going to go ahead because I, since we rearranged things, I don't think I talked at all about Hearthstone, which I had also been playing some last week. They finally, I hadn't really dabbled in it in at least a year, maybe longer, but they drew me back in by adding an entire new class, the first time they ever have. Added the Demon Hunter, so I couldn't resist the pull of a new set and a new class. And in particular, in any of these type of games, when they add a whole brand new faction or sub-faction or something, I am always very excited about that type of thing. So I've been poking around with that some, and of course it's already been hit with some nerfs and such, and I mean, whatever, I guess. It's a digital game. You can afford to push out updates and tweak costs and whatever with at a very low bar. But I had this discussion with some other folks before that I just, I don't know. It's just a different design mindset than I would have gone into it with, because I've definitely been seeing complaints from a lot of people that it's broken the competitive, like, upper end of things for right now. But I just think, like, it's the first time you've added this sort of thing. Everybody would be all over wanting to play it and try to break it however they wanted, without it being pushed all the way to the absolute tippy toppy of frankly everything. So it just surprised me personally to see both, though several other folks have said, yeah, that's what you do. You just push something brand new all the way to the top, which I don't know. That feels like the type of mindset that caused issues in, say, Thrones every time a new house box came out and that house got pushed right to the top of things. So, yeah, what do I know?
Yeah, Thrones shows that a little bit, but also I think, I mean, the problem that Demon Hunter has as a concept is that, like, there's already 8 classes. To make a 9th class work on a design level, the design space in Hearthstone is really narrow. And there's already too much overlapping with factions classes in Hearthstone. And then Hearthstone at this point has a really deep card pool, and to sort of make Demon Hunter interesting after that initial oomph has worn off, they've got to crank it up. And yeah, so I'm not surprised that they pushed it too far.
Yeah, I mean, it probably shouldn't really surprise me either. It's just not the direction I would have gone, but whatever. It's been fun. I just really wish they hadn't dropped their new set last week, right? No, a week and a half ago now. And then Magic dropped theirs last week as of this recording. So now I'm so torn in which direction to play things online. I have not paid attention really to new set drops much on either game and how they related before. Have they practically overlapped like this in the past? Is this something that, like, are Hasbro and Blizzard going to go that much head to head trying to fight over online TCG players? Ugh, yes. That just does not sound like a good business plan for at least one of them. I'm not sure which, but ugh. Mm. I don't know. Aaron doesn't fiddle with any of that Hearthstone business.
Nope, I tried it. I really didn't like it.
They have a phone app.
It's nice. Does Hearthstone have? Does it have draft?
Pseudo. It has arena. Yeah.
It has arena. Yeah, which is kind of like draft.
Mm-hmm.
So
I don't know. I'm kind of okay. I don't really need another money thing.
It's not player draft though. It's,
well, then what's the point?
You're not really drafting against AI either. You're drafting. They're giving you a random selection of cards, and you're sort of making decks out of them.
Yeah, it's Yeah, it's kind of somewhere, I guess, in between draft and sealed.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, I don't like sealed very much.
Or, hey, actually, you remember when we had that draft app on the Whitebook site a little bit after Second Ed launched?
Yeah.
Where it would show you three cards and you had to pick and then so on?
Mm-hmm.
That's Arena Draft.
I'm okay. I'm going to stick with Arena for Magic.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. I was just, you know, I thought of something that, oh yeah, that'll get the concept across.
No, understood. That works. All right. I think that's it.
Good show.
Thanks for joining us, everybody.
Yeah. Woohoo! We'll be right back.